Hello, friends, and welcome to episode number 276 of Bad Flips and Maple Dips. I'm Patrick. He's Justin. Nice little break from the podcast for us, Justin, but we're back in the saddle. This is the worst time of year for baseball because nothing interesting is happening. So I've taken it upon myself to read a classic baseball book. I haven't told you about this yet, actually, but no. I'm reading a book written by W.P. Kinsella called Shoeless Joe, which is the basis for the motion picture film Field of Dreams. And it's not too different from the movie, but it's very long. There's a lot of, like, nothing happening. And instead of, I don't even remember what James Earl Jones' character's name is, but...
Darth Vader.
Yeah, instead of Darth Vader, it's actually the writer that Ray Kinsella abducts.
Okay.
Is J.D. Salinger. I don't know if you know who that is, but he wrote Catcher in the Rye.
Mm.
Which was a huge hit for many decades and still is, really. But I guess he was a baseball fan. But he was also, like, a recluse for, like, decades. It's weird. I wasn't expecting that. And the movie is a much more condensed version of the story, and it's much more interesting than the book. But I'm going to power through and read it anyway, because I already bought it. But anybody out there who is a follower of us, if you know anything about, like, baseball novels or even nonfiction books you recommend, I mean, don't recommend Bill James to me, but, like, we get it. Like, if you've been listening to this show for the previous 275 episodes, we know who Bill James is. I'm looking for recommendations for good baseball books. So hit us up at BFMD Podcast on Twitter. Website bfmdpodcast.com. What are you up to?
If you haven't, I have one for you. You should read Closer. It's the Mariano Rivera, like, memoir book that he put out. It's pretty good.
Okay.
I like that one. And then I can't remember what the R.A. Dickey one's called. That one was pretty good too.
The Closer. Oh, he wrote this.
Yes, he did.
Rivera wrote this. Oh, yeah. Okay.
It was, like, after he retired, a couple years later, he put out this book. It's very good.
Are you talking about Wherever I Wind Up?
Yeah, the R.A. Dickey one. Yeah.
Authenticity and the Perfect Knuckleball.
Yeah, that's a good... For people who like knuckleballs, which I know you are one of them,
yes,
you would enjoy it because he sought a lot of mentorship from previous knuckleballers when trying to perfect his pitch. So I think you'll appreciate that part of it.
Those are two I'd recommend. Pitchers in the history of baseball, Phil Niekro.
Yep, that's right.
Knuckleball master.
I believe he's in the book.
Hey, he should be. He's
So it's been a while since I've read it, but yeah, like, those are two that I like. Those are two just, like, recent, like, players that I've read their books after they've retired, kind of thing, and it's pretty good. I enjoyed it.
Did we talk about Phil Niekro before?
Yeah, a few times. Many times, yeah.
And how his brother hit a home run off of, I think Joe hit a home run off of Phil or something like that.
Yeah, I believe that's something like that.
I think I told that story on the podcast before. It's crazy, but anyway, that's a lot of quality baseball there. Two incredible pitchers. But anyway. Yeah, I'll check those out. I'm kind of interested in... I want to read about, like, the earlier years of baseball, like, pre... like, start of the World Series, all the way up to, like, probably the Second World War. I'd be interested in that, because that represents, like, 80 years of baseball history.
Yeah.
And nobody talks about any of that anymore, except for, like, the stars. But there were a ton of players... who never get talked about ever. I was reading about, you know, like, a triple, right?
Yep.
So I was reading about, or I watched a video on YouTube, I think it was, of players who hit the most triples.
Okay.
And this guy came up, his name is Sam Crawford. And I guess he has the record, the MLB record for most triples. He hit 309 triples. He hasn't played since 1917. Obviously. I mean, he passed away in 1968. He got into the Baseball Hall of Fame in 1957 in the Veterans Committee. But this guy was smoking triples. He hit right behind Ty Cobb in the lineup for the Detroit Tigers for like 14 years. And the two of them did not like each other. They had a very acrimonious relationship. Is that the right word? Acrimonious?
That sounds like a word that would be used, yeah. I don't know. My
angry and bitter. Yeah,
spelling bee vocabulary has gone downhill since I graduated high school 13
years
ago.
So these two guys, they hated each other. And both of them actually had like incredible numbers for triples.
Right.
Because home runs, that was during like the dead ball era.
Dead balls, yeah.
Yeah, so kind of cool to read about guys like that, but not a name that would ever come up. And then there are other dudes who hit like 200 plus triples I'd never heard of. And it was kind of crazy. It's very interesting anyway. Most people know who Tris Speaker is, but he's also on that list of triples. But that's what I was doing in the last 2 weeks. I was reading about obscure baseball stuff. So here we are. We're back to talk about the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah.
And Justin, you've got some news to share, and we'll commiserate over that, and then we'll talk about a couple of questions that we have on our minds going into the year. But where we're in the middle of like the cold, unforgiving months of winter, where baseball just kind of hibernates or very little happens, we kind of have to dig deep to try to find Blue Jays news. But what do you have for us today that might be relevant to our interests?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's a few big things that have happened. Well, I say big, but I don't know if that's really true. The Jays have signed three players, Patrick, and two of them are guys that we're pretty familiar with just from either having them on the team or playing against them. And the third is kind of a bit of a wild card that we don't really know what's going to happen. But the first is Kevin Kiermaier. He's back for another year, $10.5 million, so about $1 million raise for KK. This comes after he put up a 741 OPS, well above his career norm of 718, and won his fourth career Gold Glove in center field. I mean, he told us coming into the last season that he wanted to be the best 9-hole hitter in baseball, and I think he was pretty good. He kind of kept that end of the bargain, in my opinion. So I'm happy to see him back. He needed an outfielder. Would have loved it to be somebody like, say, a Bellinger. He's still a free agent at this point in time. But here we are. I mean, great defensive guy. We kind of know what we're going to get from him. So, I mean, I'm not mad about it.
What I find great about his game, other than the fact that his defense is simply the best, is this was the highest number of games he played since 2019.
Yeah.
And that's when he started to really struggle at the plate, around 2018, 2019. The numbers tail off for contact. But it's also around the time where he wasn't stealing as many bases, and he hit the kind of low point in his career with 6 in 2022. But in 2023, he stole 14 bases, which I think is really kind of key to turning mm-hmm. the lineup over and keeping the offensive threats happening.
Sure.
As they churn through the lineup. His K rate actually dipped quite a bit last year, too. Was it back down to his what is essentially like a high point for him, about 21.1% K rate. So making good contact, his BABIP was up 30 points last year. His batting average was up almost 40 points.
Mm-hmm.
Even his power, he had a 50-point increase in his slug. Big year for KK last year. And obviously the defense was just incredible. Having a guy like him back on the team for one more year, even if we get 80% or 85% of what he did last year, that's enough for me to be like, yep, that's good. That was a good signing. It's a lot of money, but not as much money as you'd think, given the value that you're getting from him. And where Dalton Varsho struggled a lot at the plate last year, it was nice having Kevin Kiermaier in the lineup, able to do what we had hoped Dalton Varsho might do to some extent, which is be in the bottom part of the order and be able to keep it moving.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm happy. I think it's a great signing. I think it's exactly what this team needs. His family loves it in Toronto. He loves it in Toronto. Let's just keep it going.
Agreed. Yeah, I've got nothing but good things to say about Kevin. I think he gave the team more than what we were expecting last year. And really, the only time he was injured was when he got beat up by the wall in Fenway for the cheese grater out there. So it wasn't really his fault. He made a play. Still made the catch, so that was good. But, I mean, yeah, it's good to see him back. Anchors the bottom half of that order. Hopefully, yeah, get on base enough to turn it over to for the big guys at the front. And, yeah, obviously, we know what he's gonna get. We know what we're going to get in the outfield from him, so pretty low risk deal there. This next one is not really low risk, but it could be high reward if something were to turn around. The Jays signed former Yankee and Minnesota Twin Isaiah Kiner-Falefa to a 2-year, $15 million deal. IKF, as he's known, plays all over the field, Patrick. He's really traditionally has been an infielder, but the Yankees actually played him quite a bit in the outfield last year, and he was very good out there. He's great with the glove. He's basically another guy that fits in with that Biggio, Espinal, Ernie Clement, Davis Schneider, Otto Lopez super utility role that the Jays are really high on in their system. It's really crowded now on that infield role. I mean, you've got Bo Bichette and Vladdy at short and first, but between second and third base, you've got four or five guys who are going to come into spring training. They're trying to battle for those spots. You know they're going to end up on the bench, and they're all going to play quite a bit. None of these guys are going to get 600 plate appearances unless one of them really takes over early on in the season. But it was a weird signing at the time because it didn't really address any holes in the Blue Jays lineup. So it's very confusing to me. I don't really know why they did it. I don't get it. I'm not really a fan of bringing in another guy who's glove first, because that's basically the entire 5 through 9 in the order at this point, it seems. Obviously not, but it feels like that. So it's a very confusing deal for me. Do you have anything that can make sense of it?
I mean, I see it both ways. On one hand, he's a super utility player, which is very useful in 2020s baseball. You can see a lot of teams have some pretty suboptimal fielders, and right, it has an impact on the game. The little things they do add up. And while the Jays are an excellent fielding team and an excellent pitching team, the hitting is really the big issue. And the question really to ask ourselves is Isaiah Kiner-Falefa combined with Kevin Biggio, Davis Schneider, Santiago Espinal, and Ernie Clement, are they going to give us what we need at third base, where Matt Chapman probably isn't coming back? As a free agent, he's commanding quite a bit of money, and that's why he has not signed with anyone yet. They're paying IKF $7.5 million to do what Kevin Biggio can already do.
And Santiago Espinal too, really.
Santiago Espinal as well. But there is actually a disturbing trend with both of those guys. We talked a little bit about this before our episode recording, but both Espinal and Biggio are not the defensive wizards that you would think they are.
No, they definitely aren't.
Espinal had a great year a couple years ago where he was an all-star, and his defense was great. But his bat has really fallen off since that all-star selection, and he hasn't really recovered yet. And while he was never a guy with a lot of power, if you can play great defense, yeah, that's cool. But if you can't hit, 270, 280, where you don't have any power at all in your bat. That's a problem. But now the Jays have three guys who can play third base. Well, four guys, really, who can play third base. And none of them do offense and defense well. That's, I don't know. I don't know how they're going to figure it out. But if it were me at this point, I would just be brute forcing a Kevin Biggio getting 600 PAs.
Yeah.
And just like, just say, fuck it. See what he can do with 600 PAs. He's probably, in 600 PAs, he could probably give you 25, 30 home runs. And if he can figure it out at the plate and maybe hit better than 220, I mean, God, if Kevin Biggio could hit 240 in 600 PAs with his known power and his ability to draw walks, that would be better than Matt Chapman.
Yeah, look, I love Kevin, but if Kevin gets 600 PAs, this team is not
doing
well.
Because he's not really even remotely as strong at defense as any of the other names we've mentioned.
Yeah.
He can play everywhere, but can he play everywhere well? Well, he can play second base okay, but I wouldn't... This team, the way their rotation is and pitching staff is built, is to have an elite defender at third. So paying $7.5 million for a guy who doesn't hit really well...
Yeah, Connor Falefa is going to be playing good. A lot of third base because he's the best defender out of the group that we just talked about. So.
And that's fine as far as the defense side of it, but to have like your third baseman is typically like a power hitter.
Yeah, and right? That is not any of these guys really. I mean, Schneider is he has the most pop for sure, like without a doubt, and showed it last year in limited time, but just doesn't have the we don't have a track record in the bigs yet for Davis Schneider. He's improved every year in the minor leagues, but it's difficult to just say, here, kid, you had 100 great plate appearances. Now you're the starting third baseman for a team who's expected to win 90 games and compete for a division title. Here you go. Have fun. It's a bit of a lofty ask, in my opinion.
Yep.
So, but yeah, that's the IKF saga, I guess. But
it's going to be interesting going into camp where you have IKF, Biggio, Schneider, Espinal, Clement, and then... Is Orelvis ready?
Yeah, I mean, Otto Lopez is in the group still. I mean, there's a Spencer or Addison Barger is going to be competing in spring for a potential bench bat spot. Like Spencer Horwitz still has to really, unless they sign another backup first baseman, Horwitz probably has the inside track, and he also can play a corner outfield in a pinch too. So, but there's still a lot that remains to be played for on this team in terms of the four guys who are going to be on the bench. But yeah, we'll see what happens. I don't know. There's still like what, 5 weeks before player pitchers and catchers report, 4 weeks now, I think we're February 15th or something like that. So it's coming closer, but there's still about a month left and a few things could happen. Signings could happen. Trades could happen, whatever. A guy that really nobody had on their radars for the Blue Jays that ended up signing with the team is Cuban pitcher Yariel Rodriguez. He was pitching in Japan, took the entire 2023 season off to work out, build himself up. He pitched in the WBC for Cuba last year as a starter and threw like 7 1/3 innings over 2 starts with like 10 Ks or something like that. He was a relief pitcher in Japan, Patrick. For the most part, he did have some, like, he played in the Cuban leagues as a younger man, but went to Japan and pitched there. In 2022, he threw 56 games out of the bullpen, 54 2/3 innings, so about an inning per relief appearance. Had a really good strikeout to walk ratio, 60-18, and gave up 0 home runs that year, which is the most impressive stat. And even the year before, 7 games, gave up a couple home runs. The year before that, in 12 games, 8 home runs, but nothing really fancy there. He also started some games those years. But, I mean, in a year of full relief, a whip under 1, strikeouts well over 1 per inning, only gave up 7 earned runs in those 54 innings, so that equates to a 1.15 ERA. Now, we know that pitching in Japan is different. The baseball is smaller.
it's just a different beast altogether there dealing in the Nippon League, and that's often compared to like kind of like triple A, if not like double A and a half sort of thing, I would say 4A, somewhere in that range, depending on the quality of player. Obviously there are stars like Ohtani and Hideki Matsui who come over from there, but he's an interesting player because obviously taking a whole year off just to focus on like building yourself up is interesting. So there's a lot of question marks with this guy because, yeah, he wants to be a starter. Most teams viewed him as a relief pitcher, and that's why he ended up signing in Toronto, because it sounds like they've told him that they're going to give him an opportunity to either start or, I guess, be sort of like that swing man, like Bowden Francis type guy that we had last year. Obviously, the group of Francis and Trevor Richards kind of filled in for Manoa for a while until Hyunjin Ryu came back. So there's a lot of flexibility that Rodriguez will add. And it really makes that fifth starting spot even more of a question mark. Like, I guess this is insurance if Manoa doesn't bounce back in the spring and look better than he did last year. At least you have guys like Rodriguez and Francis who you can bridge the gap with. Or, I mean, there's even been people online saying, oh, maybe they send Rodriguez to AAA to start the year to build himself up. I don't know if that happens. We don't know the terms of the deal yet. They're still working out, I think, physicals and probably the immigration visa status for Rodriguez before they can officially announce the deal. But it's believed to be somewhere in the area of 3 to 4 years and around that $30 to $32 million mark, likely with some incentives based around innings pitched if he ends up actually being a starter. But at worst, I mean, he becomes a swingman or a multi-inning reliever. So it's a guy who's got like a devastating slider. Like, I was watching some video highlights, not only from the WBC, but also from his time in Japan. And the slider is like plus plus. It's very good. And he's mid to high 90s in his fastball, 95, 96. So I like it. I like the move.
Good signing. I would be pretty shocked if he started.
I would be too. But we have to wait and see what he is like in spring training. We just don't know.
It begs a lot of questions, though, because if you look now at the depth of the starters and then what the bullpen is projected to look like, I'm starting to think Bowden Francis is the odd man out.
Man, that doesn't really mean anything because he still has minor league options, right? Like, he's not...
Well, yeah, but I mean, he was so good last year.
But you can never,
I don't know why you wouldn't...
You can never have too much starting depth because... All right. We were spoiled last year, right? Like, everybody stayed healthy.
Yeah.
And we don't know if that's going to happen again. So having two or three guys in the system, and I mean, there's still people who think Ricky Tiedemann may get a crack at the big league sometime mid-season this year, depending how AAA goes. There's more depth in the starting pitching organization than there has been in a while. So I like it.
Yeah, I'm not bemoaning, you know, Bowden Francis being relegated to depth. I'm just saying that, yeah, I mean, there's no way the Jays are going to have everybody completely healthy for another full year. That just seems...
It's tough, yeah.
Unrealistic, but... Mm-hmm. Man, there's a lot of question marks around that fifth rotation spot. I don't know what to consider. The front runner is obviously Alek Manoa. However, it's been made pretty clear, if you read between the lines, that he's not just going to be handed the fifth starter. Like, last year was a huge setback in his career, and he's going to have to come back and earn a spot on this team. And some of the stuff that happened at the end of the year, I don't know whether or not I should sympathize with Manoa, or if he's got somebody in his crew that's you know, giving him bad advice. But the delay in reporting to Buffalo, I don't know, man.
There's definitely some bridges that need to be rebuilt between Manoa and the fan base in a lot of places.
Yeah.
The one thing that I think all fans can agree on is that we would all like to see Alek Manoa be Alek Manoa again and pitch well. I think regardless of how you feel about what went down, I think
the best, obviously the best interest of the team is still to have Alec Manoah be a contributor.
Well, to go from being a Cy Young nominee to having basically the worst possible follow-up season you could fathom.
Yeah.
I mean, if Alec Manoah pitched anywhere close to what he pitched the year before, the Jays would have won the division.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, the Jays had to fight for their lives to get into the playoffs. And squeezed in with, like, what, two games left? One game left? And I would attribute a lot of that. I mean, his starts were putrid. The team lost at least 10 games as a direct result of his poor performance.
Yeah.
And I don't know what you attribute it to. I have always maintained that Manoah came into the season looking very unprepared. As did Alejandro Kirk. I don't know what that is. I don't know how to further qualify that, and I refuse to. Except to say that I hope this year is a different story. I mean, yeah, it would be great. You know, be even greater is trade Alec Manoah for a third baseman. That would be preferable. But the team, they're trying to construct a team similar to the Rays. And they're hoping that all these players that they sign who are like super utility or whatever you want to call them are all going to overachieve like every Ray player that's ever played on the team does.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, but like if you're leaning on all these guys to overachieve, you're going to find out.
You're going to have a bad time.
Yeah, you're going to find out real quick that it's not going to work that way. And this team might end up fighting for its life again in September just to try to get into the playoffs. That sucks. This team, the window is open. The window's been open longer than the Orioles, and they have zero division titles to show for it. Zero playoff wins. Granted, the Orioles also have zero playoff wins, but the Orioles also have one of the richest farm systems in the league right now. The next 5 to 10 years, the Orioles are going to be the best team in the division. Unless something bonkers happens. While the Jays have frittered away their years of contention to, you know, squeak into the playoffs and then get fucking thumped by the Twins? By the Mariners? Jesus Christ, this team. Anyway. I'm not saying it's all Alec Manoah's fault last year. It's not. The team couldn't hit.
Yeah.
But he definitely put them in a hole to start the year. His first, like, 10 starts. Or whatever it was until he got sent down. So, we've already talked about how the other four starters probably aren't going to have the same fortune they had last year where they stay healthy. Does this organization have the depth at starter to be able to protect itself from another complete meltdown the same way they did last year?
I say they do now, as long as it's only one meltdown. Let's say Kikuchi reverts back to what he was before last year and you can't afford to start him. He's really the only guy outside of Manoah who I'm worried about. I feel like Gausman, Berríos, and Bassett have enough of a track record now that we know what we're going to get from them. But yeah, I think they do. I think we already talked about Bowden Francis. We mentioned Trevor Richards as a guy who can also go multiple innings. Yeah, and having Rodriguez now, even if Rodriguez ends up not being a starter, he could be a 2-3 inning or like a once through the order kind of guy. So I think there is enough of a hodgepodge of guys you can get through it now. Do they have like a true starter to fill in? Not really, because even Ricky Tiedemann, he is a starting pitcher, but most of his outings last year were 4 innings max. He's still building up his innings limits. So yeah, they don't just have like that Casey Lawrence like they had a few years ago where they could call him up, throw 5 innings, and no matter what he did, they just leave him out there for 100 pitches kind of thing. They don't really have that. But I think the quality of options available is definitely improved. over where it was a couple of years ago. So I'm pretty confident that if there is a starting pitcher that goes down, they can fill the hole above average, I would say, in the meantime. So, yeah, I'm more confident than I was.
Yeah, I am too. At the same time, gosh, it really sucks to be coming off such a tough year for a young pitcher who has options, is not very expensive, and had like a Cy Young caliber season, only to have him just absolutely shit to bed last year. So like, it's, I don't know, man. This pitching staff, top to bottom, if you look at the whole picture, is definitely top three in baseball, if not the top one.
Yeah.
I think I've said in the past, I think they're the best. And then signing Yariel Rodriguez certainly helps them to be better. It's just, I have a lot of question marks about Alek Manoah, and I have a lot of question marks about Trevor Richards in the pen too, but he's less of a problem, where a starter, you're expecting them to throw like 130, 150 innings and be good. Trevor Richards, if he is bad, you just get rid of him, and he's only going to pitch 50 innings. So, and he's not high leverage anymore, right? But Alek Manoah, a lot of this team's success next year might hinge on Alek Manoah's success, which doesn't feel good. I think the question I've been thinking of a lot, Justin, in the last few weeks, especially with all the TikTok videos or Instagram videos or whatever, you know, social media uses. Oh, look at Vladdy take BP. What do you think is, where are we going with this? Is Vladdy going to have a bounce back year, do you think?
I feel like he can't be. I feel like it'd be hard for Vladdy to be worse than he was last year in terms of his power numbers. I think that
yeah.
I think a lot of the Jays will have bounce back years offensively, which is probably why the front office has been so hesitant to just go out and make a big splash. I think they're predicting bounce backs for guys like Springer and Vladdy, and probably even guys like Varsho and Kirk will get back towards their career norms instead of being well below. And I can see that. I'm optimistic that all of those guys will be better than they were last year. I think that we saw a fundamental change in the organization. Everyone was trying to hit the ball the other way too much, focus more on line drives than pulling fly balls for home runs. And I think that's really, in the end, one of the big reasons the team were as bad as they were offensively. They've made some changes on the hitting side of things. Obviously, Dave Hudgens has now been relegated down to the minor leagues. He's probably just hanging out in Florida, which is where all old people want to go when they're old and white. So good for him. I guess he's got what he wanted. But they brought in Don Mattingly is going to have more of a say, allegedly, in the hitting this year. So we'll see how that goes with Guillermo. And they've got a few other new personnel on the hitting side of things, too. So hopefully this team gets back more so to trying to hit home runs, because that's what made them so successful when they were winning division titles in the mid 2010s and competing and getting to the ALCS. You know, like, the Jays and the AL East as a whole is a division that thrives on home runs. We saw the AL East get absolutely like shit kicked in the playoffs last year. All four teams who made the playoffs all lost like immediately. And the Yankees were another team who Aaron Judge also said, we've took the focus away from hitting home runs this year. You need home runs. Oftentimes in the playoffs, you can get two-run home runs or a three-run home run. That might win you a game. The Jays didn't have they had one double or something in their two playoff games. Like, what are you doing? Like, hit some home runs. Just hit it hard. Like, stop trying to finesse everything and just smoke the damn ball. Pull it. Like, baseball is baseball. I mean, no matter how much you want to change it, home runs still, they're always at least one run, guaranteed.
You know what I love about Bo Bichette? is that Bo has been the same
guy. He hasn't changed anything.
He has not changed one iota. And while he's, you know, he is stealing fewer bases.
That's
and
fine.
He's, you know, he's not as fast as what he was when he was in his earlier 20s. The power is still there. The average is still there. The plate vision is still there.
Yeah.
You know, maybe over time he develops a bit more patience at the plate, but that's really not who he is. It's not. Yeah, I doubt
and
it, too.
And you know what? And yeah, and Bo's the guy who fits that mold of a guy who should be hitting the ball the other way, because that's what he's done his entire career. That's how he's a foul line to foul line guy. He can hit the ball out of the ballpark anywhere. He's got but the same power at all fields. They tried to take the rest of the team and turn them all into Bo Bichettes last year, and it didn't work. Because there's really only one Bo.
Yeah, it was ghastly. It was ghastly trying to watch Vladimir Guerrero Jr. try to smack more line drives, and he ended up just like very vicious flyouts or like lineouts, and it was just like, you gotta like wait for your pitch. And then drill that pitch as hard as you can.
Smack the shit out of it.
Like your life is dependent on it. And it was just, last year was just miserable to watch. So, we can predict or project until the cows come home. But I think ultimately some type of mental reset will be good for Vladdy. I think it'll be great for Alejandro Kirk.
Great for the whole team.
Because my God, the hitting was so putrid last year. It was so frustrating. This team has everything it needs to win a division title and be winning playoff games, and they're finding new and unique ways to screw it all up. And I'm hoping that, you know, Don Mattingly will be able to help some of these guys, just say like, look, stop trying to grip the bat so tight. Just like, find your pitch and hit it. And with Bo, you just leave Bo alone. But the rest of them, like Alejandro Kirk last year was, what do we give him? What was your grade for Kirk?
I don't remember. I'm trying to forget about Alejandro Kirk's season. Yeah.
Absolutely miserable season, offensively. Defensively, though, I'm pleased as punch about him behind the plate. It's just, good God, the power just disappeared from his bat. I'm hoping that this year will be a good turnaround for Kirk, and I hope that he focuses on what he does best this year. Same with Vladdy. Those two guys, they need those guys to be hitting bombs, not trying to smack quality line drives the other way. Like, stop trying to finesse this thing. Yeah. Big meaty men slapping that ball hard. Just do it. Maybe that's what happened to Matt Chapman, where he hit less than 200 in the final 5 months of the season.
Yeah, I think so.
It was one of the most frustrating things I've ever seen in baseball, watching Matt Chapman hit from May to October. I can't believe it. Couldn't believe it.
I'm right with you.
Well, we're at the end of the episode now. If you like what we do, follow us on Twitter at BFMD Podcast, website BFMDpodcast.com. You can find us wherever you find podcasts. We're easy to find. We like getting feedback, too. So, hey, if you want to give us a little shout, did you like our prospect episodes? Do you think our grades were fair? What do you want to chat about? Hit us up. You got anything else?
No, let's wrap it up.
All right.
Patrick out in Halifax. I'm Justin in Saskatoon, and we'll see you next time.